I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna, Vasudev, the personality of Godhead, by whose invincible potencies influences them, less intelligent class of men, to call me the supreme controller. It's kind of a very humble thing for Lord Brahma to say, it seems. Why does he meditate upon Vasudev? Because Vasudev makes people think that he's the supreme controller. So it's kind of like he's saying that that's quite an accomplishment, and only God could do that and make them think that I am God. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, slide number 5, I think, here or something. As will be more clearly explained in the next verse, the illusory potency of the Lord bewilders the less intelligent to accept Brahmaji, or for that matter, any other person, as the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji, however, refuses to be called this, and he directly offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Vasudeva, or Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, as he has already offered the same respects to him in the Brahma Samhita 5.1. And of course that is Ishvara Parama Krishna Sat Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Slide number 5, 6. The Supreme Lord is the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord in his transcendental body, the ultimate cause of all causes. I worship that primeval Lord Govinda. Next slide, number 7. Prabhupada continues. Brahmaji is conscious of his actual position, and he knows how less intelligent persons, bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, whimsically accept anyone and everyone as God. Yes. A responsible personality like Brahmaji refuses to be addressed as the Supreme Lord by his disciples or subordinates. Yeah. The foolish persons praised by men of the nature of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses feel flattered to be addressed as the Supreme Lord. And here we have a picture of a dog with a bow tie, mortarboard hat, and diploma in his mouth. Okay. But he's still a dog. So, next slide, number 8. Prabhupada continues. Why such persons take pleasure in being addressed as God, or why such persons are addressed as God by foolish admirers, is explained in the following verse. So two times Prabhupada is referring to the following verse. And then we have a picture from Light of the Bhagavat, which is lantern bugs, fireflies. Fireflies, there. And the whole purport talks about how people are deceived in Kali Yuga. And so I actually have that here on slide number, I guess it's slide number 9. Light of the Bhagavat, verse number 5, Prabhupada especially talks about this phenomena. And he says, the evening in the rainy season is dark all around. There is no sight of the twinkling stars on the horizon or the pleasing moon. They are covered by clouds, and the insignificant glowworms become prominent in the absence of the luminaries in the open sky. Next slide. Number 10. In the godless civilization of the age of quarrel, Prabhupada continues in Light of the Bhagavat, there are countless religious societies, most of them trying to banish God from religion. Glowworms want to be prominent in the absence of the sun and the stars. And these small groups following various religious conceptions are like glowworms trying to be prominent before the eyes of the ignorant mass of people. There are now a number of self-made incarnations people follow without authority of the Vedic literatures, and there is regular competition between one incarnation's group and another's. And here we put a picture of ourselves as being possibly one group. Yeah. The Vedic knowledge comes in a tradition from the spiritual master through the chain of disciplic succession, and the knowledge must be acquired through this chain without deviation. In the present age of quarrel, the chain has been broken here and there, and thus the Veda is now interpreted by unauthorized men who have no realization. So there we go. But they're still presenting the Veda, yeah, and they're still possibly claiming in some ways to be in parampara, but actually they're not authorized, yeah, to explain it. And they're not explaining it in terms of their own realization. Okay? The so-called followers of the Vedas deny the existence of God. As in the darkness of a cloudy evening, the glowworms deny the existence of the moon and stars. Saner people should not be waylaid by such unscrupulous men. Bhagavad Gita is a summary of all Vedic knowledge, because it is spoken by the same personality of Godhead who imparted the Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahma, the first created being in the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam was especially spoken for the guidance of the people of this age, which is darkened by the cloud of ignorance. Nice. So we went on here. Now we have a picture of two guinea pigs duking it out with their boxing gloves on. And we extracted this one citation. Prabhupada says, regular competition between one incarnation's group and another. You know? So, of course, in the history of Christianity, there's been so much violence, you know. And pretty much thinking about it, you know, in the West, the Western world, which includes a lot, all of South America, Mexico, Canada, North America, Europe, and then practically speaking extending into Russia. Russia became Christian, maybe the 7th century or something. And in my own research before that, there was almost nothing in terms of written records. There were folk traditions and songs. So, but even into Russia and into, of course, the Middle East, you know, Iran, Iraq even, then it's the same, one small religious group. The Jewish tradition, even the Arabic tradition, which the Arabs claim from their side, was not that extensively spread according to what we're looking at. There were many groups. And they were in the Middle East, and they were worshiping Al, who was related to the sun, like that. You know, and it was describing that the Jews actually possibly even picked up the monotheistic attitude from somebody else. You know? So from them, of course, Christians are followers of Jewish tradition, and they claim that Christ is born in parampara, you know, from David. And the other side, the Muslim tradition, I think it's that Abraham or somebody had several sons, and one side became Arabs and one side became Jews. So they claim that Muhammad is coming from a parampara on that side. You know? But all of them, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, all claim Solomon as their patriarch. You know? So it's amazing, this one religious conception is spread all over, predominantly a very large part of the world. Other people, you know, following Confucius, Confucius, very prominent in China even now, and he synthesized all the previous acharyas available at his time to generate his philosophy. He didn't create something new, really. You know? And then Socrates, and from him we get Plato and Aristotle, and that whole tradition of jnana, you know, science, you know, follows that method of analysis, of logic. You know, they have their tradition. And then Buddha, and of course Buddhism spread. So it's here and there, you know, some Buddhism in India, so maybe some more Buddhism still in China, and then maybe some in Japan, Ceylon, and here and there, you know, different places like that. And so people, so many places, you know, there, in many places then there's an agreement, you know, upon God, you know, so everybody's worshiping the same God, you know. But then it comes down to different groups. So some people want to follow Christ, and some people want to follow, you know, Moses or Abraham, and some people want to follow, Maimonides. He's the kind of the most powerful Greek, I mean Jewish, acharyas, and different than Jesus. And then other one that I want to follow, you know, Prophet Muhammad, his name bless us, and you know, people like that. You know, so there's regular competition between one incarnation's group and another's, like that. And we see this, the violence and the warfare, you know, is so incredible. You know, but usually the violence and warfare is not so much based, as we know, upon philosophical concepts. Those are simply like, you know, a bluff to cover the fact that what we're really after is land, you know, cattle, you know, sense gratification in the form of beautiful wives, fine houses, comforts, like that, you know. So in Kali Yuga, people, you know, they don't understand. They don't understand the message of Muhammad, the message of Confucius, the message of Socrates, the message of Christ Jesus. You know? And because of this, then they run after pieces of broken glass, ignoring the jewels of these philosophers. And then there's not enough, and so there's competition and violence. You know? We were also wanted to mention this, of course, even in ISKCON, you know, when Prabhupada left, and even now to some degree, you see the different ISKCON gurus, you know, I would be claiming, in myself, trying to take up this position. I've seen that these arguments develop between the followers of this Swami and the followers of that Swami. One time, Jayapataka Maharaj was in Arequipa in the south of Peru. And they were telling him, oh, this, you know, this Hanumat Swami's followers are like this, and your faithful followers are like this. And he responded, he said, Hanumat Swami and I are friends. Why can't you be friends like that? You know, and so we are. You know, we're different people. You know, of course, there'll be differences, and it can be healthy, should be healthy. You know. And the beginning, there may be some materialistic, you know, divisions among who's incarnating Prabhupada's vision better than who else. Okay, but we keep it under control, and by the process and by friendship, then gradually we resolve these things and get rid of our own, you know, stupid, selfish desires. So especially very practical, that by Maya's potency, even in our own religious society, we can form different groups, you know, and then try and promote our particular personality. And when Prabhupada was here, it was the same thing. You know, Guru Kripa, Tamal Krishna, you know, Prabhupada likes my program big, Prabhu. I used to hear that. Prabhu, the Prabhupada likes my program big, you know, and your program is useless, you know. So, yeah. So let's go on here, next slide. Number 14. Okay, and here we have Srimad Bhagavatam 4:38, and this is Lord Vishnu talking to the sons of Maharaj Parchini Barishat, and he tells them, the personality of Godhead said, my dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. So what pleases Krishna? Friendly relationships amongst the kings. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me. The Prabhupada's purport. Since the sons of King Prachin Abharihat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachini Bahishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. So slide 16. Even though people may officially unite, they have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently, they cannot be united. Slide 17. This unity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. And, of course, that's a big point. You know, we hear that even at the top, highest level, there are spiritual disagreements. You know, Prabhu, I want peace. Well, you're not going to find it in spiritual life. You know, Radharani and Chandravali are two extreme differences in how to serve Krishna. And not just that, there's also Taraka, Shama, Palika, eight gopis, you know, seven more besides Radharani. And they're in between Radha and Chandravali in terms of their Chandravali, in terms of their particular moods and humors. So they have different ways to serve Krishna. And this is dynamic, developing. There's no end to it. Prabhupada's talking about the verbal fights, the joking between Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda. And Prabhupada says that Lord Nityananda is the Avaduta consciousness, and Advaita Acharya is the Smarta consciousness. And he said, from the beginning of spiritual life, there has always been these two groups. I guess Rukmini's side is more Advaita Acharya, and Chandravali. Always been these two groups, and they've never been able to understand each other, and they never will. Like that. But the thing is, when everybody has their space, you know, their position, then we can appreciate everybody's service. Actually, practically speaking, the gopis, Radharani's wild gopi group, of violence to Krishna, and Chandravali's peaceful, submissive, shy group, they fit together very well, like that, to increase the whole appreciation of how to serve Krishna and Vrindavan Dham. So the thing is to find our particular humor, position, even before we're at a very profound level, still we realize our psychophysical nature gives us a certain ambience, consciousness. And as we can understand what that is and engage it in Krishna's service, serving Krishna to the best of our ability, even if there are conflicts, then they're very nice. They're very, very help us. They sharpen our intelligence. They motivate us to improve our service like that. And after arguments, we feel better. and we actually feel closer to the other person like that. So if we go on in this 430 purport, Prabhupada says, those who are actually engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. Right. And also we have a citation here from Madhya 19.156, which is Rupa Shiksha, instructions to Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Charitamrita. If a devotee commits an offense at the feet of a Vaishnava while cultivating the creeper of devotional service in the material world, his offense is compared to a mad elephant that uproots the creeper and breaks it. In this way, the leaves of the creeper are dried up. Okay? Purport says, one's devotional attitude increases in the association of a Vaishnava. Tandara charana sevi bhakti sanevas janame janame hai eya virash. By his personal example, Narottam Das Thakur stresses that a devotee must always remember to please his predecessor Acharya. The Goswamis are represented by one's spiritual master. One cannot be an Acharya, spiritual master, without following strictly in the disciplic succession of Acharyas. It's interesting because here the word Acharya is with a small a. Yeah. One who is actually serious about advancing in devotional service should desire only to satisfy the previous Acharyas. Hai Goshanyar Mui Taradas. This is slide 21. One should always think of oneself as a servant, of the servant of the Acharyas. And thinking this, one should live in the society of Vaishnavas. However, if one thinks that he has become very mature and can live separate from the association of Vaishnavas, and thus gives up all the regulative principles due to offending a Vaishnava, one's position becomes very dangerous. Offenses against the holy name are explained in Adi 8:24. We put that into our index because, you know, where is a good explanation of the 10 offenses? And in different places, we have one for the second canto. But here, Prabhupada actually picks out, you know, one explanation of where the 10 offenses are explained. Giving up the regulative principles and living according to one's whims is compared to a mad elephant, which by force uproots the bhakti lata and breaks it to pieces. In this way, the bhakti lata, shrivels up. Such an offense is especially created when disobeys the instructions of the spiritual master. So we don't actually have to even be offensive to Prabhupada. There are people who are very offensive to Prabhupada. But here, it's especially created when one disobeys the instructions of the spiritual master. Prabhupada says, in this movement, we require everyone to rise early by 4 a.m., attend Mangal Arati or morning service, perform kirtan, read Srimad Bhagavatam. So some of them chant our Gayatris, worship the deity according to the rules and regulations, the standard, like that. Find some practical process in Sankirtan. So if we're not following his instructions, it's offensive. And it especially happens when we give up the association, you know, of devotees. And that way we're protected. That's the fence that protects us from the mad elephant offense. If we go on with his purport, slide 22. This is called Guru Avajna. The devotee must therefore be very careful not to commit offenses against the spiritual master by disobeying his instructions. As soon as one is deviated from the instructions of the spiritual master, the uprooting of the bhakti lata begins. and gradually all the leaves dry up. In slide 23, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.157, next text, it said the gardener must defend the creeper by fencing it all around so that the powerful elephant of offenses may not enter. When the bhakti creeper is growing, the devotee must protect it by fencing it all around. The neophyte devotee must be protected by being surrounded by pure devotees. In this way, he will not give the maddened elephant a chance to uproot his bhakti creeper. When one associates with non-devotees, the maddened elephant is set loose. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Asat Sangha Tyaga E Vaishnava Char. The first business of a Vaishnava is to give up the company of non-devotees. A so-called mature devotee, however, commits a great offense by giving up the company of pure devotees. Yeah. So, starting to listen to different literature and read things not related to devotional service, you know, and rather than hearing in the devotional service and the association of devotees. Slide 24. So human being is a social animal, and if one gives up the society of pure devotees, he must associate with non-devotees, asat sangha. By contacting non-devotees and engaging in non-devotional activities, a so-called mature devotee will fall victim to the mad elephant offense. Whatever growth has taken place is quickly uprooted by such an offense. Wow. One should therefore be very careful to defend the creeper by fencing it in, that is, by following the regulative principles and associating with devotees, the pure devotees. Even if one thinks that there are many pseudo devotees or non-devotees in the Krishna consciousness society, still one should stick to the society. If one thinks the society members are not pure devotees, one can keep direct company with the spiritual master. And if there is any doubt, one should consult the spiritual master. However, unless one follows the spiritual master's instructions concerning the regulative principles and chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, one cannot become a pure devotee. Yeah. So there's a nice description in ISKCON, because we're involved with this, with people violently, you know, critical of devotees in ISKCON, and we're trying to deal with them and help them. They're all demons. They've all deviated. But here's a question, you know. Are they following the regulative principles and chanting and hearing the holy name? Well, they're following four principles and chanting 16 rounds. But they're still demons. Well, it's kind of hard. We should take a very serious consideration about deciding a devotee is a demon if he's chanting all his rounds nicely and following the four principles strictly. Maybe he is. But it should be a very serious consideration before we start giving up the association of people because it irritates our mind. Okay? One cannot become a pure devotee. By one's mental concoctions, one falls down. Oh, my goodness. If you're a psychologist, you know this is called delusional complexes, delusional systems. And they develop like anything. You know, one devotee, specifically in San Francisco, he was taking LSD to chant his rounds. And, of course, the story is that Jayatirtha Prabhu was actually soaking Tulsi leaves in LSD and then offering them a sandalwood paste with Shila. And they're distributing this Mahaprasadam, and people would chant japa with him, and he would take them, and they would be in ecstasy. They were experiencing paranormal states of consciousness because of his association. Really, they're tripping on LSD. Yeah. And so then what happens? Our mental concoction, we start to develop this idea, that idea. He said this, she said that, I think this, this is my group. And it takes work. Keep these systems going, to develop them, to look for evidence, to find our citations, to find our friends. So this one devotee in San Francisco, he actually developed this idea that he was an incarnation of I think Arjuna. Yeah. And in his circle of associates, of devotees, you know, one of them was actually Bhima, and another was Yudhisthira. He was identifying them, you know, if he was going on like this over several weeks, months. And then one girl who he was attracted to, forgot her name, she was actually Draupadi. And she was hanging out that time with Guru Kripa Prabhu. And so Guru Kripa, he found out, he realized, was Duryodhana. Like that. So as this would go on, he would with the devotees who were supposed to be Bhima and who hadn't realized it yet, he would just stand next to them and sometimes say, "Bhima! Bhima!" And they would kind of look at him, and he would smile mysteriously, you know. So at one point, he decided to rescue Draupadi from Duryodhana and tried to pull her out of the temple, and she started screaming and beating on him. And then Guru Kripa came over, who was Duryodhana, and started beating on him. And so he ran away and couldn't figure out why Draupadi was beating on him. So a few days later, he was taking prasadam in the temple, and devotees were talking near him about how Jayatirtha had developed these delusional systems and on LSD, and thought this and that, and laughing. And he was hearing this, and he was beginning to think, well, huh, that's interesting. Huh. And so then he actually cut down on his LSD for a couple of days and realized he wasn't Arjuna, and, you know, Draupadi was the girl, so on. Yeah. So we can see it. It goes like that. We develop a whole logical system. And people can tell us, oh, Prabhu, it's not like this and that. And we quote from this and that. We quote from the letters, and probably letter to this person, probably letter to that person, and have a sometimes enormous, you know, delusional system, which makes us quite comfortable like that. By one's mental concoctions, one falls down. By associating with non-devotees, one breaks the regulative principles and is thereby lost. And Prabhupada goes on to cite Upadeshamrita, text number 2, like that, you know. So it's kind of our whole, you know, humble presentation on this verse. And, of course, the actual text again here, you know, Lord Brahma is offering his obeisances and meditates upon Krishna, whose invincible potencies make less intelligent class of men think of him as the supreme controller, like that, you know. So we kind of got onto this about, you know, keeping Srila Prabhupada in the center, you know, the pure devotee, and understanding him properly, and appreciating that, yes, Prabhupada does empower different people. People do empower all of us, you know, become incarnations in some way of the potency of the parampara, like that, of Srila Prabhupada. But how to understand this properly is very important, you know. And if we keep association of pure devotees in ISKCON, devotees who are chanting, following, and probably will see my experience, that when these sectarian groups do develop in ISKCON and really impede, and they keep Krishna from giving the mercy to a yatra, and they become prominent, you know, even subtly, you know, they cause difficulties, you know, then the people who are promoting it are not people who are following the regulative principles. You know, 16 rounds, 4 principles, morning program, you know, some looking for some sankirtan. And then automatically you're looking for friendship, help. And even though you're false amongst your devotees, you try and put friendship, you know, prominently. And the Better Business Bureau, their motto is, start with trust. You know, before you start looking for all kinds of criticisms and cheating in business, well, I'll cheat him because he cheated me. You know, it's a very common phrase. Well, that's business. It's not business. It's robbery. Yeah. Before we get into that, we need this, you know, being trustworthy. And so it takes education, chanting. It's the example of Narada Muni and how he got information about how to associate with devotees, the prachetas. Yeah. And then we can keep a very good association of other pure devotees in ISKCON and be protected from our mental concoctions, and have a very, very wholesome understanding of Srila Prabhupada, you know. And then at that time, you know, Krishna's blessings will come on us, and we can really expand this mercy like anything. So that's our class here. and I've been talking loudly to try and, because our volume is supposed to be low, and I feel like a Baptist minister in Nashville, Tennessee. So brothers and sisters, if you have any comments or complaints or suggestions, please let us know. Hare Krishna.
Okay, Maharaj. No, you sounded real good.
I was talking loud, brother. Get the gospel out.
Well, went through the heart. Anybody have anything they want to add?
Hallelujah.
Just a thought. You were talking about if one begins to deviate, well, if one begins to associate with the non-devotees, a satsanga tyag, and one begins to deviate from the principles, etc., and he may develop this very delusional mentality of thinking, you know, I'm Bhima and you're Drona, etc. Well, it really isn't much different if one just starts thinking back, I'm Sam. If we're identifying, whether we're thinking Arjuna, we're just thinking I'm Sam. That's in a sense equally as delusional, because that's not us either.
It's a very wonderful point. That's it's bad enough, isn't it? Bad enough to think we were where we were. My God. Wow, thank you very much. Wow. Yeah, and it's always coming. I've heard Prabhupada said, you know, I've been a sannyasi for many years. I think I even saw him say it when video or something. But still, sometimes I think about my former wife, you know. My wife, if he said like that, my former life and my wife. And he said, this is natural. He said, but I don't go back. That's intelligence. You know? So it's a fact. Mm. Always these memories, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later. And sometimes I've noticed, like when I was in Russia, you know, nobody spoke English. I was for only 2 or 3 weeks, you know, in this kind of like psychological deprivation environment, traveling outside of Moscow. And everything, the wallpaper, the smells, the social standards, it was all back about 1955. And so I started having these flashbacks of when I was like 6 years old, 8 years old, of my mother calling me and this happening. And it was just unbelievable. It was so deep. These other delusional personalities that we have. And again, this lifetime, my goodness, but also some of the intense ones we're carrying for several lifetimes, you know? And they archetypal images of who we were and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's amazing. So keeping the association of devotees, it seems like, wow, it's just, no, but it's just, we have to be, what's the word, like, you know, surrounded. You know, what's the word? Bombarded. You know, bombarded by devotional consciousness. Yeah.
Prabhupada gave that example many times of how easy it is to break a stick. When you pick up another stick, you can break it easily, but when you bundle a bunch of sticks together, they can't be broken. In other words, the total is a greater amount of strength than the sum of all the individuals.
You think of these big, I mean, with big ropes, you can pull. One time our bus was stuck in the sand, the guy brought a tractor over, and we tied a rope on and pulled the bus out. But it was a rope, and a rope is composed of nothing but strands of hair like that, isn't it? Tiny little strands of hair, you know? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, another good, yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah.
That's one, right. Yeah. Any little fiber. Any one of the little fibers you could break easily, but somehow when they're bound together, the strength is so much greater than the sum of the individuals.
Wow. But bamboo has more compression strength per pound than steel.
Mm.
My engineer told me this. You know, more compression strength. You put pressure on the steel, will buckle. Bamboo can take it. Grass. Composed of fibers. Yeah. That's why for me these programs on Friday here are so important for my whole balanced spiritual program, to get association of all of your good selves. And now especially we're kind of alone here in some ways in Tennessee. So it's a small location. And you know, it's a little bit peaceful in the sense that I can really focus on stuff. You know, I don't have to have a lot of people around, other things happening, which is distracting in some ways. So it's good in that sense, you know. But at the same time, too, then working out association by electronic media, by doing projects together, I think that's the main thing. You know, even if you live away from devotees, but you're doing some project with some of the devotees, like you're getting something ready for Rath Yatra, you know. And then when that's there, a little communication, a little association, and I'm going to meet that person this time, and if I haven't memorized my verses, or I'll look bad, I'll feel bad. You know, that's even more important than physically being, you know, being together, is actually having projects, you know, that you're working on together, like that, you know.
All right. I sometimes think that, like, the Judds, like Judd Barat and different personalities, that I've noticed that when you talk to anyone, they have I call it an assumed context. Whenever they say anything, that the Atmaban Manyate Jagate Dek, push it on to you that they think you're just like them, and they assume, like, how are you? A simple thing like that. If you, like Judd Barat and King Lahugana, he found out that actually Judd Barat doesn't think the same as he does as soon as he started talking. So if you don't say anything, they just assume this context. I sometimes wonder that the Judds, they just didn't want to get involved with that whole difference between the regular context, because they'd have to preach, and then how much would you have to say before? I mean, that King Lahugana, how many times? It was like chapter after chapter he kept saying, could you say it again? I don't understand what you're saying. So I sometimes think that when you're, you know, like, okay, pass the salt will work, but I mean, anything that they say, they just bring this whole idea that they think you're on the same page and how to deal with that. Unless you're preaching, you may get association of that context. If they assume that you're the same as them.
My friend, when I was in college, actually, David Donenfeld, very intelligent guy, and actually he became one of these guys, the Vipassana yoga guy, big leader. Anyway, he told me when we were in college someplace, I guess we just come out, he said, you know, 9 out of 10 people are on weird trips. And if you want to communicate with them, you have to understand their basic insanity and start from there. And it's something that stuck with me in life, you know, is that, yes, we're all nuts, you know, but then people really, when you get down to it and really talk to them, you've got to find out what it is their basic, you know, basic delusion is, you know, like that. You know, I became a devotee. I got involved in Krishna consciousness. And we're kind of going a little bit different ways, you know. So at some point, he picked me up at the temple. I think I wasn't, maybe I was initiated then. And we went off for a drive up to, you know, Marin County and stuff, and I was talking all about what I was doing, you know. And I was just ecstatic explaining Krishna consciousness, everything else, and basically talking, and he was just listening, and nice guy, you know, pious. He was absorbing, you know. And we got back to the temple, and he dropped me off after about maybe like 45 minutes of just, I was just preaching Krishna consciousness to him, and he was just listening, you know. And he said, you know, I can't remember a single thing you said. He said, but I have no material desires now. You've destroyed all my desires. What am I going to do? You know, he was kind of laughing, you know. So, yeah, you know, hearing repeatedly over and over again. Consciousness means perspective. And the word bhava, you know, that it means that, yeah. It's a change in perspective like that, yeah. Oof.
I unmuted those of you on Skype because somebody was making noise. Does anyone else have a question or comment?
Yeah. About other topics too here, because it's very, very specific, one specific verse out of a whole series of, you know, of ideas that Lord Brahma is presenting.
I just wanted to clarify something. You know, you were making reference to various sectarian religious groups the major Abrahamic religions. You also, I included Confucius in there, but that's just moral codes, isn't it? There's no divinity that's assigned to either Confucius or his philosophy, is it?
I was talking with, because I'm reading a little bit, studying a little bit here and there, you know. But and I look at the BBC biography of Confucius, you know. But I asked Miguel Polo, who's a big professor in of Chinese philosophy we deal with in there, and he says, yeah, definitely. Definitely Confucius talks about, you know, transcendence, you know, like that, you know. So, like, you know, any really good moral and ethical code comes to the point of, you know, Brahman, you know, level like that, so on. And so, yeah, he said that definitely within Confucius, basically, it's like that. It's just, you know, there's, you know, striving for immortality, you know, striving for eternity and things like that. And again, Walt Whitman, he said, like, you know, life's a spiral. And so I'm going upward, but I see the same things again and again, you know, but each time higher, you know. So he said, life is a road. And he said, where does it go? And he said, I don't know. Yeah. He said, but I know it goes someplace good. So that's Brahman. You know, yeah, you're convinced. The details aren't, no paramatma yet. The features aren't there. You know, but you're sure, yeah, life's good. You know, there's always something good that's going to happen. Just hold your breath and hang in there. And, you know, have a positive attitude. So that kind of transcendence, I think, is in Confucius' teachings.
That's interesting. Does anyone that you know of actually say that he is divine? Because, like, certainly the emperor of Japan was supposed to be divine, hailing from the sun god. Anything about Confucius in Chinese tradition?
Yeah, the whole. Well, when does it start? China, I guess, you know, it goes back. There's a so-and-so mythological red emperor or something who's like the first guy somewhere here and there. This is what, generally speaking, you know, you'll find in the histories. And after that, there was another dynasty, And each dynasty was supposedly existing because of the mandate of heaven, like that, you know. But if you get into what is heaven, then it's very similar to the Vedic description. There's a Yamaraj, you know, the Nagas are the, what do you call them, the dragons. You know, very similar, you know, China and the cosmology and everything else, you know. And one of the greatest classics, Journey to the West, Sun Wukong, monkey and piggy, and everybody with the monk, are heading on the orders of the Tang Emperor from China to India. Because they have karma kanda scriptures, basically what it is. How to get out of hell, how to get this benefit, how to get that, you know. But they haven't got jnana karma scriptures, you know, which is basically liberation from the cycle of samsara and all this kind of stuff and immortality. And so then they're going to go to see the Tathagata Buddha and to get the higher scriptures, you know, so on. So it's like that. It's on the fringe. And then, you know, different people are considered to be, you know, Shaktivesh avatars of heaven, you know, so on. Yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. It is. It's a big world, actually. A lot. And these things carry on. I mean, even when Mao Tse-tung took over and was trying to enforce, you know, the Darwinian evolutionary philosophy and you know, so on, he never got rid of a lot of the cultural things, you know, in this whole process. And, you know, they kind of carried right through, you know, because people, human being, was one, Mother Lena, she was like almost won the Star Search. She was in Russia. They had this competition for kids, you know, singing, whatever, dancing. It's called Star Search in America, I think it was called. So she came in second place in all of Russia, and she was like 14 years old. And, as she said, as she grew up, she had a little picture of Lenin, and every night she used to put him in a little bed and put a blanket on him like that. And she would pray to him, you know, like that. You know? And Lenin, when they when he was in Red Square for functions, all the senators would pull the chariot. You know, like Rao Theata, he would be seated on the chariot and they would pull it, you know. And of course, people would stand in line for hours to see his tomb, you know, his body embalmed in nitrogen. As far as I know, his body is still there in the tomb. They didn't, you know, dump him in some grave someplace. But now there's not a single line. And people just kind of walk by. I saw one tourist in shorts, you know, reading the sign, here's where Lenin's body is, and gave a couple licks on his ice cream cone and continued on, you know, like that. You know? But this human being is in that, it's such an innate thing, you know, to worship like that, you know.
Kind of like the Lord Brahma of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah. On the Lord Jagannath, Rathi Ashtakar. They must have had songs about it. Okay. But okay, I guess we should get off the line here. I just discovered a way to drop our AT&T bill $100 a month, you know, and everything else. So we should be able to be okay in the future. But right now, I think we're still getting charged maybe 45 cents a minute or something like that. So.
Wow.
If I go over, so I'll get cut the minutes off here. So,
all right. Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj, and all the assembled devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Narada Muni, who's spreading the glories of the Lord all over the universe.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you, Maharaj. Adi Bol.